listeners, welcome to the Women Governance Trailblazers podcast, where we listen to the journeys of trailblazing women in the corporate governance field, their passions, struggles, and commitment to improving how companies and boards function. My name is Courtney Camlett, and my co-host is Liz Dunche.
Hi, everyone.
Liz and I are both passionate about governance, and we want to spotlight some of the trailblazing women who share that passion. We love connecting with guests from different paths and industries to hear their perspectives on what surprised them in their career and where they think the field of corporate governance is going. For this episode, we are excited to be joined by Wei Chen. Wei is Chief Legal Officer and Executive Vice President of Regulatory Strategy at Infoblox, a network and security company headquartered in California. At Infoblox, Wei is responsible for the company's legal, compliance, and governance functions, as well as government affairs. She also started Infoblox's AI program 2 years ago, driving education, enablement, and responsible adoption of AI. Wei has over 25 years of experience in the legal, governance, and compliance field, previously serving as Senior Vice President and Associate General Counsel of Strategic Transactions at Salesforce, Assistant GC at Sun Microsystems, and spent time in big law at a couple of our favorite law firms. In 2000, before AI was popular, Wei founded the Atticus Project, a nonprofit dedicated to driving AI performance, education, and opportunity in the legal space. Wei is the course creator and instructor of two AI courses, Generative AI for the Legal Profession with Berkeley Law Executive Education, and AI Strategy for Legal Leaders with Stanford Law Executive Education. Wei also co-authored academic papers that were published by leading AI conferences, such as NeurIPS and ACL. Wei also has a weekly blog on AI on Substack called Fairly AI, so definitely check it out. Welcome, Wei.
Thanks so much. It's an honor to have the opportunity to talk with you and share my thoughts around this very important topic.
Great. Well, we're excited to talk with you. And as Courtney mentioned, you've held senior legal roles at companies like Salesforce and now Infoblox, among many other things that you've done in your career. Are there key leadership lessons that have shaped your approach to governance and compliance across these different corporate cultures?
Yep. Great question. I'm so glad that we start with that because that is one of the most important things. Like all things, good governance starts with the right goal in mind. So let's ask ourselves the question, what is the goal for having good AI governance? Is it having a solid AI governance committee or the most comprehensive policies and governance documents online? Or is it something else, right? Of course, we're all gonna say, of course, it's something else. But let's all dive a little bit deeper and think about what that something else is. For me, the goal of AI governance is unleash human potentials leveraging AI. So when you have that goal in mind, the tools, the first thing they can't do is they can't hinder human agency, right? The second one, of course, table stake, it can't violate law or policies, and they certainly shouldn't harm people. But then when we start talking about these artifacts, like AI governance committee, like policies, responsible AI principles, all of these things, they're just means to an end. I call them artifacts, right? If we stop focusing on the artifacts, we can focus on instead not how much that we lecture or how much we publish, but instead how much our stakeholders, be it our regulators, customers, or partners, actually hear.
That's really interesting. And you just have so much knowledge. So one of the things that you created, tell us more about the Atticus Project and how you see AI transforming contract review and M&A diligence in corporate legal environments.
Yeah, I have to admit, I love this question, partially because I don't have a good answer. I don't know where things will be for contract review and M&A due diligence in, like, let's say even 12 months, not to say like two years. However, I think there may be a saying something around it's easier to predict things that's 10 years down the road rather than 10 months, you know, especially in the field of AI. So in the long run, I know that the contract review and M&A due diligence, I don't know whether this is 15 or 20 years down the road, I know that these things, as what we know it today, will completely transform. They will even disappear, right? But the goal, you know, going back to my first, the answer to the first question, what is the real goal here? The real goal should never be review contracts or conduct M&A due diligence. Let's think higher. It is to move commerce forward more efficiently and identify opportunities that create the most value. I know it all sound very lofty, but let's put it in concrete terms. If you're acquiring a company that has tremendous amount of synergy and value to your business, you will take on risk. You will take on a lot more risk than if you're just acquiring a tuck-in that is not going to drive incremental revenue at a high, very high level. So everything in business, unless you're violating law, which we rarely deal with, is about balancing risk and rewards, right? So as AI continue to evolve, we will be able to tackle all of the diligence related questions much more efficiently and at scale. But more importantly, it's shifting what we will be looking at. If the benefits side of the house is becoming increasingly more exponential, then you know your risk tolerance on a number of the areas will go down. And so you will only focus, you will only spend the time focusing on things that you really care about. So I would love for people to start looking at the benefit side of the house, using AI to see how we can identify more efficiently the target company that is gonna bring the most synergy and the most value, right? And then the next step is to, in that framework, in order to achieve that value, what would be the obstacles that is going to hinder us from doing that? And then you continue to put very highly valuable human time on those high risk areas. So that's just my answer to where I would know contract review and M&A due diligence would be in 10, 15 years down the road. For the time being, right, I would encourage practitioners to stop focusing on how do I perfect the M&A due diligence review the way that we currently do it faster and do it more efficiently. Because based on my past experience, based on my day-to-day AI use, the current AI is not very effective in terms of like doing the M&A due diligence review that as we know it yet. And it's also not very good at marking up contracts. I know that, you know, there is a lot of tools claiming that, you know, they could do perfect red line, but I have not seen one myself. And a lot of it is not because, you know, we want these tools to get better at doing red line, which I'm sure they will over time. However, that shouldn't be our goal. Our goal should be driving more value instead of driving the perfect red line. Hope that makes sense.
It does. And as you were talking, in my mind, I'm picturing a seesaw with risk being closer to the ground and the reward slash value creation being higher up in the air.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I love your focus on the real goal. I think that's something, that's a lesson that we can bring back to a lot of areas. And clearly you have a ton of experience and a very unique perspective on integrating corporate governance into those goals and business strategies, and especially on AI governance. You talked earlier about thinking past the artifacts, but what are a few good practices that boards can adopt to do this and to, you know, look past those artifacts when they're overseeing technology risks and opportunities? And is there anything that boards should be doing right now to prepare for changing regulations and changing use cases?
Yeah, there are a lot. So I'm going to share my top of mind here. One is don't treat AI as one single thing, right? You know, like everybody is, when it comes to AI governance, and then they're like, okay, let's have one document that's just lay out, like, you know, what we need to do for AI, as if AI is this one thing that has the same risk profile. It's not. It's like treating your computer as one thing, Right. So different AI applications can vary drastically in terms of their risk and reward analysis. So the board needs a framework that help characterize all of these different, we can call it use cases, we can call it tools, we can call it different applications. We just need to put things in different buckets and govern each type differently and appropriately, right? So that's one thing. The second thing is make sure your people actually have access to the right AI tools, right? And know how to use them. So many companies, interestingly enough, they're facing with two dynamic at the same time, and they're almost contradictory to each other. One is their enterprise license tools, like they paid big money for, is getting underutilized, right? Almost everybody is like, we paid for like a 500 or even 2,000 licenses, and you only see like 50% adoption or even less, right? And then on the other hand, their shadow use of AI is rampant. So that's a disconnect between not getting the right tools into the right group. Like what we need, we can't be like Copilot for everybody, right? Legal professional needs something state of the art, deep research capabilities, right? So any tools that doesn't have the deep research capability, you're driving people to go on, if they're doing things the old-fashioned way, Google, and then if they're doing things or like expensive outside consult, and if they're doing things the new way, they're gonna go to ChatGPT, like Gemini and Claude to do deep research on these legal questions. So if you want to prevent that from happening, make sure that the board advocate to give the employees the right tools based on their job function. Some people may say like, hey, how can I afford that, right? It would just create a tool a proliferation. That won't be the case because most of these tools is based on seats, and then you give, let's say maybe like 100 people in your legal organization certain, deep research featuring ChatGPT, and you can give the finance team Claude because the spreadsheet capability is significantly better or something. I'm just making. I'm not saying this, but even if they're true today, like they won't be true in 6 months, but I'm just using that as an illustration. Finally, which is I would say like almost the most important thing is you have to start at the top. Most of the C-suite organizations, they push your AI use top down, from top down. But the first thing I would do is like take a look at your C-suite AI tool use and then measure them and then keep them accountable. It is very, let's say, discouraging to the employees to see a boss who just forward them all these like, this company is using AI this, you have to do this, and then they themselves are not using AI daily. So you cannot lead today without being a good AI champion yourself.
That is so true. So you said that good governance starts with the right goal in mind. In your view, what role should governance professionals play in shaping corporate policies and cultures that encourage responsible use of AI while also harnessing those opportunities and value creations?
So governance professionals needs to focus on what truly matters. I believe in one thing: if everything is important, nothing is important. And if we say no to everything, that no one would even come to us because everything becomes a yes. Why would they even come to us? So what I encourage my team and also hold myself accountable for is when I delay a review or when I say no to something, within 24 to 48 hours, I give people a reason. This is not just like a reason about, oh, I don't have enough bandwidth, or the vendor hasn't got back to us. These are things like their terms of use actually does not allow us to own IP ownership, in the AI output. They in their contract, they do not agree to not use our customer contracts to train their AI data set. They wouldn't complete these set of questions that is gonna that is required for our SOC 2 certification. Well, as soon as I put all of those things in front of my leadership team, you can take your time. You can ask for things, and they will help you to ask for those things. So really, just like do that. focus on what truly matters and being able to articulate to your leadership what they are. And in order to do that, it requires tremendous amount of expertise, confidence, and, but more importantly, in the world of AI, knowledge on a technical perspective, right? When people think about technical perspective, they all worry about, oh, this might be, oh, I have to get a CS degree. No, you don't. If I can write paper, co-author paper, you know, that get published in, you know, AI conference, you can understand this. And I have a course with Stanford Law School called AI Strategy for Leaders. There is a particular module, AI technology and AI governance. And those two modules each, you know, have about like 40 questions. Each of them is answering these things of like, what do you know about reinforcement learning? What's the difference between pre-training versus post-training? How does data flow, you know, within your AI stack? If you don't understand that, you know, I've seen so many people coming in and basically say, oh, transparency. And what they mean transparency is like, you have to be transparent with your documentation, that, you know, you lose immediate credibility. There is no credibility being assigned to you if you don't even understand what transparency requirement under AI law. And then there is also no credibility to you if you started talking about, you know, the models as if it's code, because models that themselves are vectors. They're comprised of vectors, which is a complex structure of a whole bunch of numbers, right? You know, so if you started talking about like a backdoor and Trojan horse as if like, you know, they're applying to these models, you will also lose credibility. And then there's also a whole bunch of people who always come in and say, oh, you know, like when our team use this data to train, very few people actually train their large language model, right? You know, when you say that, it's alarming to the customer and the partners, and yet you're not even, that's not grounded in truth. So you really need to understand at a deep level, you know, what these technical, how these technical terms mean and how they apply in order to be educated and be a good governance steward.
Yeah, building trust is obviously such a big part of working with other leaders in the board. And it sounds like we should all take your courses to be able to speak the language and build that trust and communicate well on these topics and be able to do our jobs, quite frankly.
Yeah. And I also want to say, I also have another course with the Berkeley Law School, and it's called Generative AI for the Legal Profession. That's a foundational course that give you a basic summary of AI and then the different legal use cases. This Stanford course is more on, you know, governance, risk governance, you know, AI enablement when you need to play these late leadership roles. And it's a more advanced course.
Okay. Yeah, those both sound very helpful. So looking ahead, we've already shared some predictions here, but what is your vision for how AI will reshape corporate governance and the role of legal advisors in the next, say, 5 to 10 years? And do you have particular advice that you would give to the next generation of women governance trailblazers in light of this?
Yeah, thanks so much for bringing that. And I hate to repeat the cliche, but, you know, the cliche is true. AI won't replace, you know, any professionals. It will replace professionals who don't use AI. I want to add one more word to it. It will replace the professionals who not only don't use, but don't understand it. Right. Mm. Especially for governance professionals, you have to understand it. It's kind of like a privacy lawyers who don't understand data flow. You would not be that helpful. So with that, the good news is there's so many good resources out there. You know, you want to learn anything on AI, there's a good course out there. There's good materials out there. The challenge is, of course, there's also a lot of noises out there, and it's overwhelming. So that's why, you know, like, you know, I try to reduce that all that noise to things that you absolutely need to understand from a governance, from a risk, from a legal perspective in my course, and in my Fairly AI Weekly blog as well. So I want to offer something that's helpful to people to build real understanding, not just like buzzwords. So if I need to give one advice, I would say, like, try to take the time to understand this. In 6 months, you will. But the most important thing is you need to develop a set of AI habits, right? Make AI become part of your day. So the Atticus Project also have this thing called the Atticus Method. And then, you know, we build AI habits. It's almost like your workout routine. And you do that for 6 months and you're in a good shape.
Wow. Well, I'm going to be subscribing to the blog for sure. And I'll make my New Year's resolution not only being in good physical shape, but being in good AI shape.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
That's excellent. I agree with you on that, Liz. And thank
Yeah.
you, Wei, for joining us today.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
For those who are listening, we want to thank you as well. Please subscribe to Women Governance Trailblazers on whatever platform you use for podcasts, and we would love it if you would rate us while you're there. In addition, if you know a Women Governance Trailblazer who you think would be a great guest on this show, feel free to ping Liz or me on either LinkedIn or by email.
Thanks, everyone.